All right.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Pauline. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We've got a pretty good lengthy agenda, so I'm going to get right into it. If I could just have a motion to adopt the September 13 meeting minutes. Anybody want to jump in and have a motion in a second?
Mark Walter.
Move that.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Seconded by Scott. Everyone in any changes or edits? Not hearing any. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Say aye.
Aye.
All right. Fantastic. Anyone abstaining?
Hey, Tracy.
I'm staying.
Who was that?
Robert Skinner was one.
Okay.
All righty, great. Thank you very much, folks. Pauline, I don't believe I will take public comment at this point in time. If anyone has a comment from the public, they can raise their hand. Just please your name and entity that you represent or address. Right.
I don't see anybody.
All righty. Thank you very much. Our next topic is a important topic that is continuing to grow in scale and scope, if you will. We all are responsible for, to some degree, MS4 requirements that were adopted a number of years ago. There's always been talk about future regulatory controls being put in place, either at the state, by the state, or by EPA. And so there's been conversations recently about a number of different approaches. And what I'd like to do now is to turn this over to Matt Hart. And Matt's going to kind of give some initial thoughts on how we might approach this on a regional basis or sub-regional basis. So with that, Matt?
Thank you very much, Peter. Good afternoon, everyone. Matt Hart here. Thank you for joining today's meeting. And I know we also have some staff from some of our member towns, Dwayne Martin from West Hartford, Howard Rifkin from the city of Hartford, joining us for this agenda item. So it's great to have you as well. So as Peter was talking about, stormwater management, certainly a challenge for many, if not most of our communities. You know, one of the reasons why, and I think we all know, the frequency of heavy rain events has increased in recent years. Over the past couple of decades, as we've developed, we've got more and more impervious cover, which contributes to runoff. Our region also has several areas with poorly draining soils. And today, probably those areas we wouldn't allow construction, or we wouldn't allow construction with basements, but this all occurred decades and decades ago. Similarly to that, we've got many residential properties and some commercial properties in our region with stormwater lines directly connected to the sanitary sewer system. Even in our SSO, or separate stormwater communities, you know, and again, these connections were made prior to current regulations that prohibited. Also, our stormwater infrastructure across the region, it's aging, it's undersized, or both, you know, just really struggling to handle today's conditions. So these issues all combine and contribute to increased flooding in our streets, in our residential properties, and our commercial properties. And what we're seeing in recent years is that this local flooding can overwhelm our sanitary sewer systems, which leads to contamination in our local waterways, including the Connecticut River and the Long Island Sound. So the downstream impacts of this problem are pretty significant. Next slide, please. Can you advance that, Pauline? All right, so So the federal and state government are certainly well aware of this, and they've been regulating it for some time now. At the state level, as Peter said, we have this MS4, which stands for Municipal Separate Storm Sewer Systems. We have this MS4 permit process in place. The purpose is to protect our state's waters from contamination from our urban stormwater runoff. And the permit applies to all municipalities that have at least 1,000 people within an urbanized area. So that means that the vast majority of CROG towns are required to hold an MS4 permit. I think it's roughly 120 out of the state's 169 towns have this MS4 permit in place. And the permit, as you know, includes the development and implementation of a stormwater management plan, as well as periodic monitoring of outfalls, within the community. Next slide, please. So I think the state, after some years, has recognized the financial burdens associated with stormwater management. You know, I think they understand that communities are struggling to fund water and wastewater systems on their own. And now you've got stormwater systems on top of that. And in 2021, the state passed legislation that would allow towns to create a local stormwater authority. And towns can establish this stormwater authority as a new entity or assign the function to an existing body such as the Water Pollution Control Authority. And there are over 1,800 stormwater authorities in 45 of our states. And they range from very large communities to very small. City of Los Angeles has one. And then there are communities with less than 100 people that have them as well. We only have two in Connecticut. New London was first, followed more recently by New Britain. And New London took a very streamlined approach where they assigned this duty to their WPCA, and they created the stormwater utility as an enterprise fund. And I'm sure that many of us are familiar with enterprise funds and how they work. Next slide, please. So the way these stormwater authorities work, they have the ability to levy a separate user fee. It's a utility fee for stormwater management purposes. It's like a fee you'd pay for water or wastewater services. I apologize for the background siren. These fees, they can be used for educational purposes, planning purposes, and perhaps most importantly, for infrastructure, for the construction of storm sewers, drains, flood control reservoirs, things like rain gardens and bioswales, which are more on the cutting edge, and green solutions. Importantly, both public and private properties can be subject to the fee. And under state law, there are limitations in place for hospitals, forest lands, working farms, and state-owned properties. But public properties and nonprofit properties can be made subject to this fee as well. And it's determined to be more equitable for that reason. The fees can be structured in various ways. The most common method is to base the user fee on the amount of impervious cover and runoff generated by a particular property. And if a property owner takes steps to reduce impervious cover or to mitigate the runoff through green or other solutions, their fees will be reduced. And UConn has an Institute for Resilience and Climate Adaptation, CIRCA. I'm sure many of us are familiar with it, that is doing a lot of good work in this area and is willing to provide technical assistance to us. Next slide, please. So in terms of next steps, here's what I would recommend. I would like to convene a special workshop where we can take, pun intended, a deeper dive into this issue. You know, we can discuss stormwater utilities in more detail. And we would plan to invite the UConn CIRCA staff, as well as an engineering firm that's doing a lot of related work in the region, to present to us, talk about potential options, including a regional approach. And our staff now, we're exploring opportunities for funding under the bipartisan infrastructure law. And Connecticut DEEP has also announced a new grant program under the Climate Resiliency Fund There's going to be a total of $10 million available statewide. You know, those are sources we could look to for some planning work if we want to consider a regional approach here. And our attorney, we did ask, he does think that we could even look at creating something of a regional stormwater utility if we wanted to take that step through an interlocal agreement. So again, that's my recommendation, Peter, is that we would hold a special workshop, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, where we would really dig into this topic. We would invite some experts and see if there's some real interest in developing a regional solution here, because this infrastructure is expensive, and undoubtedly to make these corrections, it's going to take probably decades of concerted work. So I'll stop there and turn it back over to you. Happy to take any questions or concerns and whether or not people think this is a good idea.
Thank you, Matt, for that overview and introduction. I'm going to open it up to everyone online to see what your thoughts are. Is this a topic that you'd like the committee and your staff to get together and CROG staff to pursue? And any questions, thoughts, ideas? Love to hear those. This is certainly we're all impacted by it to varying degrees. So,
Howard has his hands raised, Peter. Howard Rifkin.
All right. Howard, please.
Thanks a lot. First of all, thanks for the invitation to participate today. I appreciate it. And Matt, I think it was a really important opening salvo on an important conversation that needs to take place in the region. So from Hartford's perspective, we would be more than eager to participate in some kind of a deep dive, no pun intended, into stormwater. I do have one question. You described a little bit New London's stormwater management system. What is New Britain doing?
This is Matt. Thank you, Howard, for the good question. I think New Britain is still in its first year, and in my conversations with Mayor Stewart, I believe they have also established the utility as a separate enterprise fund, separate from the general fund, and that is the common model. However, I don't know if they've created a new board or if they've assigned this function to their WPCA, but we'll certainly plan to get more detail on New Britain's experience and invite them to this workshop.
Fred.
Thanks. Yeah, so I definitely would support Weathersfield taking part in this as well. This is something that I've got some experience with. When I was in West Warwick as town manager, we actually did a full feasibility analysis to create a stormwater utility there. Used Fuss and O'Neill to do a deep evaluation of what it would take. Came up with a rate that would fund, you know, the work that needed to be done, the whole thing, presented to the council, and of course the rain tax public came out and said, you know, got it to the council to step away from it and shoot it down. But during that process, I actually went up to South Burlington, Vermont. They have one of the longest running ones in New England, and got the full tour of their operation and got to meet with the executive director up there and kind of walk through that whole process and with them and the success that they've had with that program up there. So it's definitely something, you know, stormwater is one of those things we all contend with because people don't want to fund it. It's not sexy. They don't see it until it's a problem and it's flooding their basements. So they don't want to talk about it, and they don't want to commit the capital to maintain these things. That's why it is a utility. It is pipes in the ground. It's not a tax. So I think we need to look creatively at this. And I think if we can do it regionally, it makes a lot of sense.
Anyone else have thoughts? Dwayne Martin, how are you, Dwayne?
Good, Pete. Good to see you. I just want to echo Fred's comments. Those were spot on as far as I'm concerned. It is a challenge to fund our storm drainage improvements. But I would support this effort. I'm glad to hear about this topic. Matt, I thought you did a great job, and others. West Hartford would be very interested to be at the table for this discussion. Of course, as we go forward, assuming we do want to do a stormwater authority or regional approach to it, we'd have to make sure that the political body in West Hartford stands behind it. But I think it's certainly worth exploring. I'm very interested in it, and I look forward to it. But I just have one question, which is if the thought is to go forward from a regional perspective, would that also include communities that maintain their sanitary sewer systems, or would that not be favorable to them for other reasons?
Dwayne, this is Matt. Thanks for your question. I think we would start by taking a broader approach, and conceivably I could see where we could serve communities that are both connected to the MDC system, but even our smaller communities that have their own separate WPCAs or are just struggling to comply with MS4 requirements. So I would like to start off by casting a broad net, if you will.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dwayne. Anybody else have any thoughts? Certainly in a past life, I had experience with stormwater utility in the Midwest. So they certainly are not foreign to entity, but it is, as Fred said, it can be viewed as another tax. And so, John, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, thank you. It is another tax, and that's okay. I think we have to, you know, get real and say it's a tax, and it's a tax for a service, which is mandated and required and socially responsible for us. So I don't think we should always run away from it. It's a tax for a service, just like public schooling is, snow plowing. So, you know, I don't think we should, you know, a fee, a tax, yes. It's a tax based on the volume of use, maybe. So just a comment on that. Also, I would suggest that we try to start with stormwater management and not get into sewer issues, because a lot of us have independent water pollution control authorities, and that gets into another whole issue of who's in charge of what. Especially with MDC as a major player here, there's some folks that just don't want to be involved with MDC.
Yeah, John, this is Matt. I appreciate your comments there. And just to clarify, I was not suggesting we consider a regional WPCA.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, we've got many of our communities are not members of the MDC, you know, like yours. You've got your own WPCA. You know, there could be an opportunity for you, for your community as well, on the stormwater management side to participate in a regional effort. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah. Fortunately, I believe we're still exempt.
Okay. Yes, you are. Your community is, yes.
So it sounds like there's interest, Matt, in convening a meeting in the near future to continue the conversation. My initial thought is, you know, part of that discussion, not only just about what the mechanics and how a regional or a stormwater utility could be established here in Connecticut, but also talking a little bit about what's the playing field. You know, how are we all addressing, you know, some of us have MS4 requirements, some don't. I know some communities are doing the bare minimum, and some have chose to develop very robust multi-year approaches to it. So that may be part of that discussion as well, just kind of a survey where where folks are on across the region may give us a better feel as well. But I think learning more about the stormwater enterprise or utility per Connecticut state law, and maybe how New London and New Britain have taken the first steps, might be a good starting point. So.
Excellent. Appreciate that feedback and direction.
So great. Thank you. Thank you for raising that topic. So everyone's more than welcome to stay on. I know, Joanne, you'd love to talk about fair rent commissions. I know that's in your, but feel free to jump off if you need to run. And Matt, I know you're going to talk a little bit about updating some of the research that you've done on the fair rent commissions on a regional basis or town by town basis. So all yours.
All right. Thanks again, Peter. So one of our members, the town of South Windsor, actually raised this question, whether or not we could consider establishing a fair rent commission. And I think that was prompted by the change in state law. I believe it occurred in 2021 that requires municipalities with a population of 25,000 or more people to establish such a commission. Many of us have had commissions in place for some time now. Many others have not. But anyhow, what prompted the request? I think most of us probably know fair rent commissions. They hear complaints from both tenants and landlords. Sometimes we forget that the landlords come to them as well. And the process, it's a quasi-judicial process similar to an administrative proceeding. And actually the Connecticut Superior Court or Housing Court requires complainants to go through a local process first before the matter can be heard at the state level. And it can be a challenge for our communities to recruit commission members, and it can be very labor intensive to staff. I know, Peter, you can comment on that point. So we posed the question to our attorney, Bob DiCrescenzo, and what he replied with, and the opinion is attached, you may have seen it, is that under the law, municipalities with populations that exceed 25,000 are required to establish a commission specific to their community. So that means they do need to establish a commission with commissioners from their community. Under a closely related section of the statute, smaller towns with less than 25,000 can create a regional body, a regional commission. And this can be done via an interlocal agreement. However, regardless of their size, towns could conceivably share staff and other administrative resources, such as a common set of procedures. And this could be done via an interlocal agreement as well. Next slide, please. So my question to all of you is, CROG would be willing to convene a meeting of interested towns, and we can talk about the formation of a regional commission that could be utilized by the smaller towns, as well as something that could provide shared staff and administrative support for our larger municipalities. For example, one of us might have a staff member with the ability to take this on, or you may want to consider combining resources to hire a part-time administrative person to handle this function. And we could help you out by estimating the workload and the resources that would be required. We can also collect sample procedures. I know the town of West Hartford, for example, has done good work in this regard. We could collect sample procedures and make them available on our website. I think we'll plan to do that point regardless. But we'd like to see if there's interest here in having a separate conversation just on this topic and any questions or concerns you might have. I'll stop there, Peter.
Great. I'd love to open it up and get feedback from all of you. Any Scott, we answered the question. Probably not the answer we wanted, but
No, but I'm sitting in for Mike today. He's at another meeting, and I know he was very interested in having a regional approach, but it sounds like the attorney has told us that we're going to have it locally. However, that being said, I do like the idea of not having to invent the wheel on our own. So having a regional conversation about sample policies, procedures, because there are landlords and tenants that move from town to town. So it'd be good to see how this would be established so that we'd be following a similar process in South Windsor that maybe Manchester, West Hartford, and Glastonbury are using. So I'd be interested in hearing more.
Great, thanks. Mr. Colby.
Thank you. I think I just have a question for Matt. Is this something that's being done in other parts of the country or even other parts of Connecticut where they have a regional approach to fair rent commissions?
Great question, Scott. I don't have an answer. I'd be happy to put a query out to the other COGs. In terms of other states, my guess is some of this could be done at a county level, because in many states, human services function is performed at the county level. But that's just a guess on my part.
Thank you.
I certainly would be, I share Scott Roberts' perspective. I like the idea of being able to at least have some model procedures and policies. We've struggled here to find someone to give train our commissioners, and that's been a real struggle. And so if we can have some uniformity or at least some model to work off of and adapt to our own community, I think that would be great no matter what size we are. So is there a general thought that if we put out a call for convene a meeting or something along that line, we'd have enough interest to get together, or we send our appropriate staff members there to have that. Look, John, I see your hand. Sorry about that. Still muted, John.
I can let you finish up your poll and follow up. Yeah. Afterwards.
Okay. I don't know. Looks like you got the floor, John.
Okay. So, not that I'm an attorney, but I would question the legal opinion that because Section 7-148CC of the general statutes say two or more municipalities may jointly perform any function that each municipality may perform separately. People always forget that law. But it overrides other laws because it's specifically saying that we can do it. It does require an interlocal agreement, but I think the standing that any town over 25,000 has to have their own is not correct, because 7-148CC says titled joint performance of municipal functions. So maybe, I don't know, I'm not an attorney.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure, Matt, had that been looked at by Bob, are you aware of?
I believe so, but I'm happy to follow up because interestingly, that's what's cited as the basis for a regional approach to stormwater is the same statute John just mentioned. So,
yeah.
Well, and it may be the way it's nuanced. It says any special act. Well, notwithstanding the provision of any special act. So maybe that's the escape clause.
Notwithstanding language. I don't know. Yeah. But it's worth double checking.
All right. Thank you.
So, Matt, I guess my sense of it is it's a worthwhile topic to continue to pursue. I know there's, I've already had some pushback from my counsel about doing it on a regional basis. Because how does someone from Windsor Locks knows what's going on in Windsor? I just bit my tongue and just so. But I think a policy and procedures certainly would be very helpful for all of us as we try to retool these commissions in many cases that haven't had to be in operating for a number of years. So.
Okay, so we'll plan to proceed accordingly. We'll start collecting. We've got a sharp intern, I think, that we can start to we can ask to do some of the groundwork here in terms of collecting models from around the region. And we'll plan to organize a separate session on this too.
Okay. Great. All right. If there isn't anything else on the fair rent, then we've got some staff reports. And Matt, do you want to take a breather or do you want to start off?
Oh, I'll start off and I'll try to go quickly because I know I'm doing a lot of talking today. I just have a couple things. First of all, I want to congratulations to Kim Bona for organizing a what I understand was a very successful meeting this morning, annual meeting of our Capital Region Purchasing Coalition. I know Kim and her colleagues here at CROG worked hard to organize that. So congratulations to all of them. I also wanted to let you all know, you should have received an invitation. If not, you will shortly, to an event that CROG, the UConn School of Public Policy and Capital Workforce Partners is sponsoring on November 4th, related to public sector workforce development. This event is going to run the morning of November 4th, 8:30 to roughly 1:30. It does include lunch if you want to stay for the lunch. It's going to be held at the Hartford Public Library. And we're really going to be focusing on the whole question of public workforce development. You know, like state government, we're experiencing thousands of retirements at the local level. You all know how challenging it is to find qualified staff to fill many of our positions. We're really going to get into all of that in earnest. And we're going to have some great speakers from state government, local government, and I believe even the assistant secretary from the Federal Department of Labor is going to provide the keynote during the lunch hour. And we're going to run this in conjunction with the National Academy of Public Administration. In conjunction, this is also going to qualify, if you will, as their regional meeting. Dr. Mohammed Al-Qadri, who I'm sure many of us know, the head of UConn School of Public Policy, he is a NAPA fellow. So it should be an interesting event. I know some of you have signed up already and look forward to seeing you there if you're available to attend a very important topic for us. Moving on, just a couple of additional things. Affordable housing. I know we were all required to develop a local plan for submission to the state. Many of us have done so. We recently conducted a survey. Some communities are still working on it. I have asked our staff to, on CROG's website, and we will be transitioning to a new website towards the end of the calendar year, but we're going to be creating a separate section related to affordable housing where we'll have model plans from across the region on the website for your use, particularly for those communities that are still working on it. So that'll be a new resource to you. And once it's available, we'll let you know. And then lastly, Peter, I wanted to touch on the bipartisan infrastructure law, you know, what we're focused on right now. And we're trying to provide an update to each of our communities. A couple things, an update to each of our committees, excuse me. A couple of things we're looking at now, you may be aware of the National Culvert Removal, Replacement and Restoration Program that was recently announced, administered by the DOT and FHWA. And this is specific to waterways that are home to migratory fish. So while that may sound limiting, it actually, a fair number of our communities probably qualify here. If you look at the Connecticut River and all of its major tributaries. So we are working with DEEP right now on a mapping exercise, and we want to prepare a map of culverts from across our region that we think would be eligible under this program. So we're working on that, and we'll make that resource available to you once it's ready, you know, so that can help inform your decision on whether or not to apply under this funding source. We're also looking at a variety of potential opportunities that would assist us on the stormwater management side, as I mentioned earlier, as well as water and wastewater service. And then lastly, I wanted to encourage all of you, as you go to start preparing your capital improvement programs in another month or so, I know the cycle comes around really quickly at the local government level, think about the local match under these bipartisan infrastructure law opportunities, you know, that 20% match. So if you've got a project for Safe Streets for All that you're contemplating, maybe a project under the Bridge Investment Program, even a RAISE grant, you know, think about that match and including it in your upcoming CIP. So that's all I've got for now, Peter. Happy to take any quick questions on those items. Thank you.
All right, questions for Matt. Matt, I have one, which if you don't have a topic yet, that's if somebody just shoot it out to us, the culvert replacement program. Do you have a sense of when those applications are due?
Are those... I believe it's early next year. Okay. So that'll come up quickly.
Yeah, great.
But we'll follow up. And actually, while the other staff are speaking, I can probably pull it up off of our website.
Okay, thank you.
And I had one question for Matt, if I could.
Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Matt, did we make any progress? I know Andover and Columbia had reached out to CROG concerning the rural trip funding for road work. I might be saying it wrong. Maybe it's not trip. But.
I'm familiar with the exact issue you're raising, Mark. Yes, Rob, Eloise, and I had a recent conversation with the Connecticut DOT on that exact issue. Our concern is the draft program does not adequately address it. And because we want more of our local rural roads to qualify into the program, that's what it's designed and intended for. So we're still pursuing that on your behalf.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And Peter, you probably just saw in the chat, Pauline said that those that culvert program applications are due February 6th.
Great.
February 6th, 2023. So that will be here quickly. And we'll get that map out to you as soon as we can.
And you got information posted on the website, Matt?
We do.
Okay, great.
Peter, on the TRIP program, I was surprised at how few roads in our town actually qualified. And one issue beyond that, they stuck with the same culvert size. That's a pretty large culvert. I mean, I think it had to be 20 feet wide. And a lot of in the rural towns, a lot of our pipes are more like 4 or 5 feet or that around that size. In some cases, we're double. So the culvert sizing should be another issue that may not be appropriate for rural roads. You know, 20 feet qualifies for the local bridge program. So anyways, if you're talking with DOT about their new regs for the TRIP program, I would look at bridge and culvert sizing too.
Will do, John. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Matt before we move on to Pauline's? All right, Pauline, what do you provide us updates?
Going to be pretty quick. RPIP applications, we are going to be, as I mentioned before, resubmitting our RPIP based on the updates from the various towns with bargaining units and confirmation from towns that don't have bargaining units as required by OPM. As a result of that requirement, we had probably a quarter of the towns withdraw. So we've had to sort of redo some of those calculations and we'll be resubmitting that. Some of them this week and the rest of them next week. And if anybody has any questions about them, feel free to ask, but it's basically the same application with just the towns and the information modified appropriately. And I'm going to do the other staff updates as well. Gasoline bid, this we've been, is those quantities are due, I believe, on Monday. So, and that's a non-piggybacking bid. So if you do not have your quantities into Kim, this is your last week, your last chance. And then with regards to, we went out for an RFP for the fire EMS records management software, as well as the audit. And those are both under review at this point in time. And that we anticipate that coming to the policy board in the next few months. And then finally, RRS will be sending CROG staff their draft of the phase one facility inventory and system assessment, which will be, and that will be shared with the committee, with the steering committee, which will meet next week for that presentation. And we're happy to also share that with this committee once we have it in hand.
Pauline, I'm sorry, I missed that last item. That is coming from what report is that?
RRS is phase one report. So that's the facility inventory and system assessment of CROG in terms of the, sorry, there's sirens in the background here regarding solid waste inventory at CROG and what the part of it also includes where the opportunities are, as well as where the, where you can, what you can do with your solid waste in the short term, yeah, as well, which is not a pretty sight, but those graphs are, they are what they are.
And that right, thank you very much. I just didn't recognize all the acronyms.
Oh, sorry. That's my fault.
Just your trash study.
It's all about trash.
I can handle that.
That's all the information that I have.
Great. The and if I could, Kim, you sent those gasoline bid requests out to our key procurement people in each of our communities?
I did, and I'll make sure Windsor has submitted before I issue it.
All right. Yeah. I'd given everybody heads up 3 weeks ago, and they were looked at me like I had three heads. So,
well, I'm pretty good at nagging with my email, so I'm sure I've seen one or two.
Good deal. Anybody have any questions for Pauline on any of those items? All right. We've covered a lot of different topics over the course of the last few meetings, but I would like to take any ideas for future items that we should be, you know, either taking off the table or putting onto the table for the first time. I know I have one that it could be a quick update. Is it related directly to the RPIP or the possibility of the building inspection contractual services? And I know at one point, Matt, you had mentioned the issue of the of contracting with Simsbury. I'm not sure if there's a temporary arrangement or is that on hold until RPIP gets processed.
No, I think the issue now lies within the recruitment itself and Simsbury, you know, finding a qualified candidate.
Okay. All right.
But once they do, we plan to bring that forward.
Okay. Great. And just as a side note, Matt and I are participating in the statewide working group relative to building and the pipeline for building safety inspectors, and so we have a deadline of the end of December, I believe it is, to make a report out. So maybe that's something that we can bring for a future meeting, Matt, as well.
Yep, happy to do that.
And Matt, I think you had one or two ideas you wanted to suggest to the committee for feedback.
I do. And these wouldn't necessarily be action items. More, you know, looking for a good discussion and committee input. So one would be CROG's support to our land use planning community. And this is an item I touched on at our recent executive committee meeting. Rob Eloise and I, we will soon be, and Pauline will soon be moving forward to replace Tim Malone's position in some fashion. You know, we've been looking at the responsibilities, duties, et cetera. We wanted to fill a couple of other existing vacancies before we did that, but we're going to be moving forward over the next couple of months. And it's very important to me and the other members of our team, you know, that we're able to provide a robust support to our local planners, and understanding that we're a diverse region and that our rural towns, suburban towns, and urban communities all have some maybe unique needs from the planning side, but there are also many commonalities as well. Related to that is the whole issue of environmental planning, you know, and relating to stormwater and related disciplines. So I just want to really make sure that CROG is set up and has the resources in place to do that, like we are doing on the transportation planning side. So that'll be a conversation we'll be looking to have with you probably next month, just to get, you know, your thoughts on our plans. And then secondly, I would recommend that we revisit our discussions on diversity, equity, and inclusion. I know this committee put a lot of time and effort into retaining a consultant, Daniel Penn Associates, to help our member towns with this work. CROG itself, we recently embarked on this journey. You know, our thinking was, hey, we can't just talk the talk, we got to walk the walk as well. So I'd like to share some of our experiences and where we're planning to go in the future. But then hear from all of you. I think there's value in members sharing their stories. And some of us may be struggling to move forward with this. And, you know, we want to find out what more CROG could conceivably do in terms of providing resources or even providing a comfort level to our member towns in terms of moving forward with this journey. So those are two items I would suggest, Peter, in addition to the ones you have.
Great. Thank you, Matt. I think it is important that we at least try to carve out some time in these meetings or for discussion and sharing the best practices, some of our, pitfalls that we've experienced in different areas. So that way there we're learning from each other. So I think the DEI conversation and discussion, and maybe if there's folks that have ventured down that path, they can, if you want to share at some point, if you want to volunteer to share what your community's done, that would be, we'd love to have it, have you folks take that lead. I fully support CROG's, the discussion about how CROG can support land use in environmental or sustainable planning. I think that's important for us to provide feedback to CROG on, as Matt looks to possible reorganization there and how they meet those needs. So that's, if we do that on the November 15th meeting, that would be great if that works for your staff, Matt. And then maybe we can invite our own planning staff to join us, or the appropriate person from your teams to be able to provide that input. And Matt, maybe leading up to that, maybe if there's three or four questions, maybe as teasers or to tee up the conversation, you guys can get that out earlier, and that might help facilitate that conversation on the 15th.
Yeah, that sounds great, Peter. And our staff is actually going out to our member towns to meet with their planning teams. And I know we have visited several of you already, and we've got more to come.
Yeah. So great. Anybody have any other, you know, thoughts and topics that we should be looking out in the future? John.
John, you're muted.
I shouldn't talk so much. I'm muting myself. Many of us are having well contamination from road salt issues. It's a real growing problem, and I think we ought to start looking at it on a not just a town-by-town basis. I know we monitor tightly the amount of salt that goes on each truck and do mileage calculations and so forth. And we still have got one area, got five wells and another road and back that we thought we got rid of it. We're back now providing water. And it's just a real growing problem. And the UConn Transportation Institute's looking at a lot of these things, but I think it's got to get above just the public works level.
All right, John, we can put that certainly is a topic that is continues to rear its ugly head and will grow potentially. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how we might be able to have a good conversation at our level and even brainstorm what steps might be. So I need Stan corrected that my calendar is obviously outdated. Not up to date. Is the next committee meeting is the 6th of December. We're combining the November and December meetings. So the December 6th. So, all right.
And I have one request, Peter.
Sure.
Thanks. Just real quick, if anybody has a really simple noise ordinance that is very uncomplicated, I'd love to see it.
I chuckle because I've been looking one for 23 years.
Well, I don't want the one that requires a noise decibel gun to be brought out to the party. Something that says reasonable accommodations for peaceful living. I don't know.
Matt, sounds like you might have experienced this before.
Yes. I was working on this in Mansfield maybe 8 years ago. So I would suggest, Mark, take a look at what Mansfield and Wyndham have done. I believe it's a reasonable person standard, so you don't actually have to go out there with the decibel meter.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
All righty. All right. Anybody else have any other items for the good of the order? All right. So again, December 6th is our next meeting, and looks like the primary topic will be discussion around land use and environmental planning. And so if you can kind of keep that in mind and maybe bring along your planning, a member of your planning team. So, all righty. Thank you very much. We'll stand adjourned at 12:55.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you, staff.